themselves.
You're listening to Country Squire Radio.
Welcome to Country Squire Radio. I'm Bo.
And I'm John David.
JD!
Hey, Bo, good afternoon, man.
Man, good afternoon to you too, sir. How you doing today?
Man, I'm doing okay. Still licking my wounds from kicking the vacuum cleaner,
right.
But
right.
But other than that, everything's fine. Yeah, man, just kind of walking with a little limp and getting made fun of plenty from all the amazing people that love me and patronize our store. And so, you know, there's just that thing where you wind up going through life and occasionally doing something stupid, like taking out your anger on the closest home cleaning utensil and, you know, and injure your foot. And so you just sit around and smoke your pipe and take your lumps, you know?
It really causes you to reflect upon your actions. This
yeah,
is true.
No, that's it. There's enough good pipe tobacco and brown water to assuage my embarrassment and bone pain. So anyway, everything's going great.
That's good, man. I'm glad to hear it. Well, hey, we've got a great episode we're going to be diving into this week.
Yeah.
It's a fun one. It's a fun topic for sure. Man, are the rumors true? Is the legend himself, Eric Stokeby, making his way to the Country Squire, the
Man. First
ever post-pandemic, pseudo-pandemic, pseudo-post, I should say.
Pseudo-post, right, yeah. Yeah, we would like to say we're on the other side of this thing, but yeah, who knows?
Go get vaccinated, people, and yeah. So we can please, just end it.
It's out of control, man, yeah. But we're on this side of 2020 having our first event. Yeah, man, Eric Stokeby representing fourth generation pipes and tobaccos, and also bringing a great line of Nording pipes and Chacon pipes with him, coming to the Country Squire on August 26th, 2021, the year of our Lord. It's a Thursday night. Man, just looking forward to that. Going to be a great evening with Eric, of course, who needs no introduction. Fourth generation pipes and pipe tobaccos, and incredible pedigree in the pipe world in his own right, and of course carrying it on, even impressing that into his wonderful son Max, who we know and love. And so just great, going to be really exciting to have and host Eric at the Squire. So if you're free the night of August 26th, 2021 here at the Country Squire in Jackson, Mississippi, we'd love to have you. We'll be having some pipe specials and stuff like that, so it should be good.
Oh, that's awesome, man. I'm incredibly envious of anybody and everybody that's going to be there. Tell Eric I said, hey, I don't think I've seen him in a couple of years at this point.
It's been a little while. Yeah, I know, man. A lot of us just haven't connected, you know, and it's strange. Of course, you know, we've got a lot of pipe shows that were going to happen this year. A few are still on, but we've had several that have kind of decided to actually not go ahead. And so it's just good to see anybody, you know, and so happy that
that's true. Yeah.
So happy that we can see Eric and me reconnect. And man, anyway, so it'll be great. But looking forward to it, hoping to sell a bunch of fourth generation pipes, Nordings and Chacombs, and should be a great night.
Yes, sir. All right. Well, that's a lot of fun, man. Glad to hear it. Speaking of a lot of fun, like I said, we've got a fun episode that we're about to dive into. And of course, this episode could not happen without the support of our amazing patrons over at patreon.com/CountrySquireRadio, the Country Squire Radio International Pipe Club. If you'd like to learn more about how you can help support the show, head over there, patreon.com/CountrySquireRadio. All right. So,
it's that time.
It is, but it feels a little different this time around, and I'll tell you why. Not only all right, so first of all, just to go ahead and you know, spill the beans, it's a Squire Select, baby. We're gonna be drinking, we're gonna be pairing some beautiful brown beverages with some amazing pipe tobacco. It's gonna be a blast. But unlike the various Squire Selects of the past, this one feels a little different for two reasons. The first is that, much like the college freshmen who have completed their first semester and are ready to party down, we, as a Country Squire Radio listening audience, have completed our training of the palate for weeks. John David, you have been bringing us to class, and all I can say is school's out for the summer.
See, I'm kind of viewing this differently, though. It's like you think, okay, we went to class and we had to sit through all these boring lectures, and now we get to party and drink. Well, okay, well, you know, which is fine, but what I'm seeing this as is this is kind of like your first exam.
Ooh,
you know,
it's
like
like
here we are, and I've you know, Bo, I've kind of instilled some of my wisdom into you and taken the time to hopefully impress you with some knowledge and to help you create some of your own skills and understand a little bit more about what's happening as you try some different flavors and what's happening on your palate. And so here's your chance to show your stuff, man.
Now, whatever, man. You're gonna be like the college professor at the bar. Everybody's there like, woohoo! And then it's like, you know, Professor McGillicuddy's like, you know, surfing on the
Professor on the McGillicuddy.
Yeah.
Is that Professor McGillicuddy like, you know, vomiting in the corner?
Right, yeah. Exactly.
No, anyway, man, looking forward to it. Should be good. I was thinking about how we just kind of done our tour through the experience of developing your palate and all that. And here we are, man, Squire Select, going to talk about some fine top shelf whiskeys and pair it with some delicious pipe tobacco. So should be good.
That's right. All right. So as I mentioned, this is kind of special for two reasons. That's one. The other is that this Squire Select is brought to you by the great city, God's city, ladies and gentlemen, of Grand Rapids, Michigan. Man. Now I know that sounds like high praise coming from me. After all, I have critiqued the good people of Grand Rapids, Michigan for their lack of, shall we say, culinary skills. The fact that spice exists and yet no one seemed to tell the people of Michigan and all of the Dutch lineage that reside there. Yay, I have said some things about Michigan and Grand Rapids that not the most favorable. However, if there is one thing that all of us from every walk of life, regardless of where you reside, can say affirming of Grand Rapids, Michigan, Michigan as a whole, it's they know how to do it. And they hooked us up, my friend.
Someone's gotta keep you warm during those bitter cold winters, you know what I mean? Yeah.
That's right, man. We love the listeners from Grand Rapids, Michigan. I mean, like, I always, in my mind, I always associate kind of the early success of Country Squire Radio outside of Mississippi came directly from two places, Austin and Grand Rapids. Yeah. And so those two cities and the pipe communities there always hold, in my mind, they are like the favored, you know, the favorite child.
Right.
Yeah,
we
exactly.
We love all our children equally, except these the most. Right.
Exactly. But anyway, man, so I'm stoked. So you had some guests that came by the Country Squire and hooked us up.
This is really great. Yeah. Longtime show listener, Jim Lung, came through Jackson. This was, it's been a couple months now. He's on a kind of a road trip with his mother, getting out of the state a little bit post COVID and trying to see some new scenery, and made a point to swing through Jackson and brought us a couple of Michigan's home brewed distilled whiskeys there. And this is the Country Squire Select Mitten Edition. We're talking about a couple of Michigan original liquors here and spirits. And so, man, even prepping for this, as I'm sitting here like trying some of these whiskeys and thinking about different tobaccos and smoking a few things to pair, I put my headphones on and was listening to Sufjan Stevens, Detroit's very own Sufjan Stevens, and his Michigan album. You know, I don't know if anybody has listened to someone as obscure as Sufjan Stevens, you'll know that maybe he joking for a while about making 50 albums like for each state, and of course Michigan was number one. That's where he's from, and I was just kind of getting into this, like, you know, little emo kind of nebulous LSD kind of thing, you know, while I'm sitting there, you know, listening to Sufjan Stevens.
Okay, hang on. Sufjan, what a weird Sufjan Stevens. So first of all, I the only reason I know who this individual is because my youngest kid sister, it was a huge Sufjan Stevens fan. Sufjan? Anyway, that kid. And, like, she used to talk about him
the
time.
Man, he's really talented. Yeah, it's just it introduces a lot of, you know, here I am. You're asking the guy that doesn't listen to music and doesn't watch movies about a modern artist.
No,
but
I don't know how to take,
I know,
this
right?
Break.
Well, we're drinking, so everything's on the table. He produces, you know, a lot of interesting combinations of instruments, and there's a lot of spiritual overtones to some of his content. And a lot of storytelling, and it's interesting. You know, he's just it's good. It's good music. It's different. So, and for some reason, that album Michigan came to my mind as I was going over some of these spirits. And I did it up with that, it was a good experience.
All right. Well, I'm excited. I'm very excited to dive.
It's like listening to what do you do? you're supposed to like watch Wizard of Oz while, like, you know, listening to Dark Side of the Moon or something. That it, like, you know, if you drink Michigan spirits and you listen to Sufjan Stevens, then it's supposed to line up in some way, and, you know, at least before the cops come.
Right, I'll leave that one to you, and I'm just gonna drink this whiskey and smoke this pipe tobacco. Great. So let's dive in, man. What are we gonna do first,
man? We've got today, like we said, a couple from Grand Rapids, Michigan. The first one is Michigan Straight Bourbon Whiskey. It's from Eastern Keel Distillery, and that's right there in Grand Rapids, of course. Founded in 2016, it was actually founded as Gray Skies Distillery. There was a trademark dispute between them and another distillery in another state, and they kind of went back and forth, and then eventually Gray Skies just decided to put the arms down, say, okay, look, we'll let you, you know, have this name. We're going to just stick to, you know, putting our energy into making some really high quality beverages. And so they changed their name to Eastern Keel in 2020. It's spelled K-I-L-L-E. It's pronounced Kill. It's from Middle Dutch, meaning waterway or riverbed. And so it's that area that, you know, is a alluvial plain, you know, in that part of the state. And so kind of in honor of that. Anyway, young distillery. They've already collected quite a bit of serious hardware going to some of these shows and getting some great awards there this year, this very year at the San Francisco World Spirits Competition, which is, you know, you've heard us mention that before on Country Squire Radio. It's kind of regarded as probably the most marquee spirits competition in the United States. There's a bunch, but and again, I'm no expert in that. I don't claim to be at all, but you see this name of this competition pop up a lot. They won a bronze for their Bottled in Bond whiskey. They won silver for Toasted Barrel Finish whiskey, and then actually won a double gold for their barrel strength, which is the highest award that you can actually get at that event. And for a young distillery like that to win that kind of hardware, really, really cool. 100% distilled in Michigan. A lot of these smaller distilleries, what they do is they're getting whiskeys from other areas and they're blending them in to make their own kind of blend of blends type of thing. And what they're saying here, what they're committed to, both of the whiskeys that we're featuring today, is that this is 100% distilled in the state of Michigan. They do not source any of the whiskeys. They do all of this there in Grand Rapids. Pretty impressive. They released the Michigan Straight Bourbon Whiskey, which we're talking about today, to commemorate their name change, which happened last year. And it's a blend. It's a double pot stilled blend. We've got 70% corn, 15% rye, 15% barley, and it's a 90 proof whiskey. So yeah, man, interesting stuff. And right there from the sweet city of Grand Rapids. So do you want to kind of describe what you're seeing there and all that type of stuff?
Yeah. So the bottle itself, it's very, man, how would you, I mean, it's no nonsense. You know what I mean? Like it's the label is kind of this yellow band with kind of a maroon circle in it. EK is right there in the center. Mm-hmm. It has kind of a young feel to it. I don't mean that in a negative way, but I mean, like you can kind of see they're not necessarily trying to communicate this long-standing legacy in the way in which they're presenting and everything.
It's simple. Yeah,
it is simple. You could almost, you know, Canva, the Canva app where you can kind of go and people will like make ads and logos and that sort of thing.
Oh yeah.
It almost feels if there was like a Canva for bourbon bottles, like that this kind of came out of that. And so it's, what I mean by that is it's very modern. It feels very kind of the moment. Sure. And you can kind of see the youth in its presentation, so to speak.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you're right. It's just real no-nonsense. It's a very elegant bottle, that big golden band there at the top with the wooden stopped cork. Their logo there towards the bottom, it's kind of a like a three clover leaf logo, which is kind of cool. So, yeah, man. You want to dive in?
Yeah, I've got a little glass poured here that allegedly, I should say allegedly, I have a glass poured here. And cheers. So, I got to make mention of this.
Yeah.
Because I've been sipping on this a little bit. And one of the things you first get from just that first pull here, well, let me just put it this way. It's cold in Michigan.
Yeah. Really?
All right. It is very cold in Michigan. But I tell you what, with this, man, that heat, you want some heat? You want some fire in your belly?
I know, man.
This will do it right here.
It's warm. Two words come to mind as soon as this stuff touches my mouth. And it is... it is warm and sweet. It is, man. It just really, really is. The warmth of it is very upfront. And this is a sweet whiskey. It's something where initially from the nose, but then also as it hits your palate, you are getting, you know, vanilla and caramelized notes immediately. It is just very much in that vein. It's interesting. They admit to that as much. They say from their own description, the nose of this is a sweet corn, vanilla, caramel. I love that they describe the palate as creme brulee. I love that they do that. That's interesting to me. They know that what they've created here is a very almost like that confectionery style sweet flavor that we talked about. Orange peel, cinnamon. You've got just a whole plethora of things going on here. But this is a sweet whiskey. It's something that stands well on its own, but certainly has a sweet depth to it. It's very, very interesting. So the citrus note, I think, is more present there on the palate, as your the nose is more of that almost like a canola oil or something that's just real viscous and kind of naturally semi-sweet. But then as you drink it, it just leaves a nice coating on your mouth. It's really interesting. I don't know. What do you think? Any other tasting notes?
There's just a lot going on here. Like it's kind of like a West Side Story type of bourbon. And what I mean by that is I just kind of feel like there's a lot of extremes that you kind of get hit with here.
Yeah.
It's kind of, hang on. Sweetness is something that I don't often go to in my bourbon, but when it's there, I definitely do appreciate it. But it's always interesting, like drinking something like that, not knowing what you're getting into and catching that sweetness, you know. But like I said, this is kind of in that West Side Story. And what I mean by that is if you've ever seen the musical or listened to the soundtrack West Side Story, you get these kind of high highs and low lows, like almost in the exact same like lyric. People will kind of be all, you know, and not all over the place in any kind of like, type of situation. But like we start up here, you know, like just these real pull from extremes. And that's kind of what you get from this. Like there is kind of like the sweetness is a unique sugary sweetness, and that heat is very, very powerful. And it's just a very interesting beverage here. It's one I would say that is to be drinking. You got me drinking this one. It's definitely one that I think works either straight up or over ice, but I would not use this for a cocktail drink. Cause I mean, I think there's enough going on here, or, you know, and this would be wasted on some sort of like mixed cocktail.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. It would make even an old fashioned or something, you know, this would be kind of over the top for something like that. There's just a lot.
Exactly.
Of,
yeah.
There's a lot of variation here. There's a creaminess. You know, over our tasting, the discussion, we talked about the mouthfeel of different tobaccos and different tasting notes and developing your palate. And there's a creaminess. There's a really nice mouth coating that you receive from this particular whiskey. And then it actually is surprising in that it dissipates relatively quickly once it leaves your mouth.
Right.
Which is interesting to me. I thought that something that rich and superlative and its flavors would linger a little more, but it really didn't. It dissipated pretty fast. It was kind of interesting. So yeah, we wanted to pair this obviously with something that would complement it well, and in something that is this complex and got a lot going on, that, you know, we wanted to bring it kind of back home a little bit. I was looking for, to be honest with you, a straightforward English blend, something that would kind of cut through the sweetness of the Michigan straight bourbon whiskey, something that would just kind of bring us back to home base a little bit, that was relatively straightforward. And so looking around, I was kind of eyeing some tobaccos that I hadn't visited in a while, and some things that were new to me, and stumbled upon a tobacco that I had a lot of fun smoking with this particular whiskey. And I don't think we've ever talked about this tobacco on air before. It's from Cornell & Diehl, one of their 4,000 different tobaccos that they make, and it's called Strathspey, Strathspey. Thespey. It's a straightforward, kind of no-nonsense English-style blend. They call it a Scottish-style blend. We might mix our semantics up, our definitions up here a little bit, but typically Cornell & Deal will refer to a Scottish blend as a English blend that's heavy in Black Cavendish, unflavored Black Cavendish, and so that's what they've done here. It's Latakia, Orientals, and a variety of other leaves, including Black Cavendish. And the Turkish here, I think, is nice and floral. They've got just a tad bit of a whiskey topping on this particular tobacco, which gives it a nice semi-sweetness, and that bite is nicely paired with the Michigan straight bourbon whiskey. You know, I wanted something that was just going to kind of bring us back to home base, and so I really enjoyed smoking these the two things together. It's rich and peaty, and that coating of your mouth from the Latakia, the oils that are included in that particular tobacco, it paired nicely with the kind of viscous syrupiness of the bottle, and helped that dissipating flavor kind of linger a little bit more. So I really enjoyed that pairing, and that's of course coming from someone that doesn't smoke a whole lot of English blends, right? So it was good. Yeah, really, really had fun getting to know that whiskey and that tobacco both. Good stuff.
Well, see, that's what I love about the Squire Select in general, and I mean, like, it doesn't, you know, it never has to be just like the, you know, the brown water. It could be tea or any kind of beverage or food. But when you're kind of going at it from looking at trying a sampling a new tobacco to pair with something else specifically, it's not your traditional, like, well, this is what I like, this is what I don't like. Mm-hmm. It's literally like, what brings out, you know, this here, what helps to bring out, you know, sometimes the whiskey helps to bring out something in the pipe tobacco. Sometimes the pipe tobacco helps to bring out something in the whiskey.
Yeah.
And I think that's a solid choice, man.
And sometimes they work together to create something that is maybe helping the two out, where maybe if, hey, this is a good product, but it needs, it's missing a little something here. And this is also good, but it needs a little something. And so they kind of work together. It's almost like the sum is greater than the parts kind of deal, you know? And so, so we do that occasionally, but man, this was good. I really enjoyed this. And this would be a good tobacco also if you do find yourself, you know, with a whiskey that's kind of on the
wild side.
On the wilder side, on the more sugary side, might be a good tobacco to kind of help you with that, because it's not going to distract from the whiskey to the point where you're overpowering it or conflicting with it. The flavor notes there are complementary enough, but it just tones it down a little bit and kind of brings it back home. So if you try out the pairing, I hope you enjoy it.
It's a good one, man. All right, so let me down this real quick as you tell us about this next one we're about to try.
Gulp. Man, really love this this next one. Another Grand Rapids local favorite there, Long Road Distillers. We're talking today about their straight bourbon. Really, really good whiskey. Long Road was the first distillery in Grand Rapids, which, you know, of course, that area is, you know, has developed a, you know, sophisticated, you know, beer and whiskey kind of scene. They've got a lot going on with that. And Long Road Distillers, when they opened up in 2016, well, no, I guess when they opened up maybe 2015, they were the first still there in the city of Grand Rapids. But since then, they've developed into this fun kind of spot where you can go eat, and they've got a restaurant associated with them, and they've opened up other locations in different parts of the state. And it just looks like a really fun place that serves, you know, their own awesome creations from the still, but also, you know, culinary creations as well. And it just, you know, is a real lively place you can take your family and stuff. So really cool. A lot of stills and breweries across the country are kind of doing that. You know, if you think of a brewery, you're like, oh, that's a place where college kids go and act crazy. But a lot of times now it's, you know, this is becoming a thing where you bring the family and
place for you and your kids.
Yeah, yeah, no, that's right. They've got, you know, a play. Hey, man, the kids, you know, there's games folks can play and people are hanging out. Maybe they got some live music, a guy over there grinning and picking kind of thing. And it's fun. You know, I love seeing that develop. And a few of them, the good ones anyway, will at least in maybe an outdoor area let you smoke your pipe. So so if you know of any of those, let us know. We'd love to mention them on the air.
But, absolutely, yeah.
So anyway, talking about Long Road Distillers today, their ingredients also, they say, that they are milled from locally sourced ingredients, fermented and distilled on site there in Grand Rapids. And so both these, you know, distilleries are really focused on kind of creating products that are not of other primary sources, but they're their own primary source, which is kind of neat. So again, some serious hardware they've collected in their short storied, you know, history. They've been nominated for USA Today's 10 best distilleries in the country, and are particularly known for their gin and their brandy. These are, you know, they kind of have a whole line of things. Today, though, we are talking about their straight bourbon, which in 2016 was released. It's curious to me the way on their bottle that they spell the word whiskey. They spell it the Scottish way, W-H-I-S-K-Y. And, you know, is that a funny thing for me to point out? Yeah. But the only place I've ever seen it spelled like that is associated with malted Scotch whiskey. I mean, with Scotch, yeah. You know, you think right, of right. when it's Scotch, you take out the E and that's how you spell whiskey to the proper Scotsman. And so I think that's interesting. I wonder why they chose that spelling. I would think that folks that are in the spirits world, that wouldn't be lost on them. And so there's got to be a reason for that. I thought that was kind of fascinating. But just a beautiful presentation. We've got a 93 proof whiskey here, and it's corn, rye, and red winter wheat grown in the I believe it's called the Heffron Farms in Belding, Michigan, and malted barley from Byron Center, Michigan. So just all local products. They know these farmers by name and get the stuff in very small batches, and it's all very selected in a discriminating way and all that kind of stuff. So, Bo, what do you see here from their presentation? And all that.
Yeah, I mean, once again, there is kind of a youthful vibe that's going on here, but this one is a bit more, I guess, more traditionally youthful, so to speak. And by youthful, of course, I don't mean that it's geared towards a younger audience.
There's not
I mean,
a Pokemon on it.
Well, no, there's not like a Pokemon. Like, no. And I mean, like, actually, it's so funny, man. It's a quick aside, but my wife and I were supposed to be going to see this pop-up Game of Thrones bar this last past week in Houston, but it got moved to October because their set wasn't quite ready yet. We're really looking forward to it. But in anticipation, I was going to pick up some of these. They had these Game of Thrones scotches that just bombed hard. Like the last season of that television show bombed hard, and then nobody bought the scotches except for a couple of different places. And then they ended up having to blend them all together and kind of make an excuse for why they were selling it. And it's one of those things, you pick it up and it's got like all of like the artwork from the show, which is obviously not geared towards kids, but there is something very like McDonald's Happy Meal about that kind of, you know what I mean?
That's
kind of
hilarious.
Marketing. It's not that.
All that to say, Long Road Distillers has not done that here, although they,
no, they have not
done
exactly.
Rabbit hole, because now I'm real curious.
That's but anyway, funny. So they we might have to do the Game of Thrones pairing at some point here in the near future. But anyway, one way or the other, yeah, Long Road. They've got their logo right there, kind of the I guess it's a hexagonal.
Yeah.
Is that right?
I think
six. Yep. I know geometry. It's they got their logo right there, straight bourbon, like you said, right on. The uniqueness of the spelling of the whiskey is interesting, because you don't, again, it's not presented as a Scotch bottle. You know what I mean? Like, it is very much, you would look at this, even if it didn't say bourbon right there on the, you know, on the front very clearly, you could kind of look at the bottle and make a strong educated guess that this isn't some random whiskey.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. It's not rye. It's not, you know, it's not going to be Scotch. This is a bourbon right here. So, I mean, like a solid bottle. I'm ready to kind of
try it. Give it a whirl.
All right. So the wheat content is high in this.
It's interesting. You immediately, at least for me, I get a very pleasant bite to this. That's more characteristic, I think, of a bourbon. I don't know, at least compared to the Michigan bourbon. Would you agree, or you feel differently?
Well, no, for me, like I said, if you're comparing the two, that's true. Because the first one was, you know, kind of it had a lot going on, and this one is a little bit more simpler in the sense that, you know, it doesn't have as many kind of flavors kind of making a name for themselves all across your mouth. This one is very much, it kind of comes through, but so it is very much a bourbon
but you picked up immediately on the wheat flavor. That's interesting. Yeah. So we're going to that vegetal part of the wheel up there. That's great.
I mean, it does have a bit of a sweetness there as well.
Yeah.
But you know, for me, like, there's, there's this balance of kind of the rye versus kind of wheat flavors that are kind of represented in a bourbon. And, you know, if you kind of have those two on a spectrum, generally speaking, I like to lean towards the rye. This one definitely leans more on kind of the wheat level. And there's almost like a texture on the tongue that always kind of like hits as soon as I sample something like this. But that being said, it's not too much in that regard. Mm-hmm. It's like, I enjoy this. It doesn't fall in my normal wheelhouse, and yet I still enjoy it. It's quite good.
I agree. I think it's something, you know, that it's not necessarily something I would pick up, regularly because of its distinctiveness, but this is a good bourbon. This is a really good bourbon. It's, they describe it as full bodied, full flavor, the spirit of Western Michigan. And I like that. You know, it's neat. It is distinctive. You know, they say they developed this spirit in 53-gallon casks. For nearly 3 years, and then it's twice distilled in 500-gallon copper pot stills. And then what they do is they blend three barrels together to accomplish a balance. And I think it's really nice. This is the nose on this particular whiskey. You get vanilla. I immediately thought of something super random when I smelled this whiskey. Do you remember? I don't even know if they make them anymore. I think they do, but those Raisin candies that were popular in the 1990s, it's a kind of a chewy, chocolatey, caramelly candy that hasn't been popular for some time, but they used to have commercials on TV. I guess that's how I judge their popularity, is that you should actually see product, you know, ads for this type of stuff.
Bro, this was the candy that like you got at Halloween that you would like just put off to the side.
No, it's really good. It's really good. It beats the heck out of a Tootsie Roll.
Well, no, that is you know what? That's not a great.
No, it's really good. It's tasty. It's like if a Tootsie Roll grew up and was popular in high school, you know, kind of thing. Yeah.
Okay. Huh. But interesting.
Anyway, it reminded me of that. I had this strange connection to that candy that I haven't had in a long time. So
interesting. Well, I mean, if it tasted like this, maybe I need to get a bag of that candy.
I know, this is good stuff. Yeah. No, really, really good. The palate was more on the toffee side. I love the folks from Long Road. They actually describe it as a cream of wheat flavor, which, you know, someone not from the South would be more familiar with that. But I got a specific spice and apricot flavor on the very tip of this as well. Something that there was a light fruit element that was pleasant, but not overpowering. And then, of course, that sweet wheated flavor that is always interesting. So the caramelization kind of comes out there on the middle of the palate. And, you know, some folks in reading descriptions and reviews online, you'll find a lot of folks got a nutty or a pecan flavor that I thought was interesting to carry on. So I didn't really pick up on that as much myself, but, you know, I love what everyone experiences from their palate, and you know, certainly a valid point. And the finish is long, it's creamy, it's a little more lingery. I think in my mind, this is what a traditional bourbon tastes a little more like. You know, certainly compared to the Eastern Keel, kind of fun, man. It leaves a medicinal flavor, I think, which kind of a more that alcohol-y flavor that you kind of get from it. Your tongue can be a little dry there for a while. And the finish is surprisingly gentle. So just really nice.
Yeah, just a very pleasant beverage. I will say, too, with this one, I can speak from experience that this actually does make for a really good cocktail. We, the other night, actually used a portion of this for some old fashions, and they were quite good.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. I mean, awesome.
Highly recommend it from that standpoint. And no, it is very sippable on its own as well. So really good. Now, the question is, like, so again, this is straightforward. The last bourbon we had was kind of a roller coaster ride.
That's right.
This one's more of kind of like a gentle carriage ride down the country road. So I'm curious, you know, where are you going to take us on the pipe tobacco?
Yeah, we went aromatic on this route. I wanted the... But a mild aromatic. I wanted something that would allow the whiskey to kind of stand on its own, and you know, something that would just augment the flavors of the whiskey itself, because it's such a pleasant whiskey to drink by itself that you know, I didn't want to muddy the waters too much, but wanted something semi-sweet to kind of round it out. And so a light semi-sweet tobacco. We're going today with Astley's number 66 Cavendish Club. Astley's, Astleys, tobacco branded from Kohlhaas & Kopp in Germany, which, of course, makes, if you've listened to the show for a while, makes tobaccos that we have highly recommended in the past and love everything that comes out of that factory. Number 66, it's a they just label it as mildly fragrant. It's a very easygoing tobacco. It's something that's superbly simple. It's there's not a whole lot going on here. It's a all-day, everyday smoke. It's one of those that is lightly sweetened. It's a semi-sweet flavor. They don't even describe the flavoring. It's so ethereal or whatever. It's just has a nice grassiness from the Virginia content. Some little flavoring, whether it be a nougat or a cocoa flavoring there. There might be a little rum on top of it. I'm not sure. But it's just a nice semi-sweet sipping tobacco and something that I think would be a good pair if you're looking for something to focus on the whiskey, but want just something kind of fun in the background while smoking your pipe to have it as your companion along for your libation. Doesn't overpower the long road, kind of gives the long road straight bourbon the center stage and provides a good supporting character for it. So Astley's number 66, Cavendish Club.
And do you pronounce the T?
I'm trying to.
Okay. Well, I was just curious because it sounded like you were saying Astley's, and I was like,
yeah.
Astley's.
Yeah.
I was like, there's Astley's. I know Astley's, but
yeah.
Astley. Astley. You know, it's funny because it sounds the same way that when you pronounce the T or double.
Yeah. So in my defense, I'll just let you keep talking.
No, yeah. It's, that didn't help me out at all, did it?
No,
all right. Well, there you go.
Sure did.
I will say, I love, go ahead.
Well, no, I was going to say just quickly about Astley's. great tobaccos. This is not one of their more sought after tobaccos. The Cavendish Club is a great all-day, everyday tobacco. It's something that if you're looking for, you know, again, very semi-sweet blend, not a heavily topped blend, but you just like pipe tobacco, you like smoking, you want something to fiddle with and something to have throughout the day that you certainly won't get sick of, this is a great tobacco to try. This tobacco also could be blended with a lot of other things. You could mix it with your favorite aromatic. You could cut it with your favorite non-aromatic. It could go in a lot of directions, and I think you'd be really happy with it. Comes in a 1.76 ounce tin. It's 50 grams. Something that I think you'll enjoy if you're looking for something easy and simple. Astley's, the ones we've talked about before from that line are more, we've discussed their Virginias more, their English blends more. This is an aromatic that is good and just something fun to mix it up with, and I think is a nice supporting character for a really good bourbon.
There you go, beautiful little blue tin. I know it's certainly not exclusive to them. I mean, it's kind of a common thing, but I just love when you're just dealing with like a number and you have like the N with a little O with a little dot under it and everything.
Yeah.
It's kind of got that old timey drugstore feel.
Well,
to
and
it.
You feel like you're buying something substantial too. You know, if it's so good that it's just got a number associated with it, like
right.
You know, I don't know. There's just like Dunhill 965. It's like, well, version 965 must have really stood out. It was so good they just kept the number. I don't know. Anyway,
no, it's true. Well, and the other thing too is there is at least by kind of contrast, you're talking about the whiskeys and kind of how, you know, you can kind of see that they are kind of newer brands mm-hmm. by comparison to some kind of like, you know, the tried and true age old distilleries and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
In the pipe tobacco world, more often, you know, than not, if it's got a number, it typically means it's been around for some time.
That's right.
Because
yeah.
it was created back when mm-hmm. you didn't really have like all these sexy names for, you know, various pipe tobaccos.
Yeah.
It was just this, that, or the other. And if it's around, it's like, man, that's some staying power. You know what I mean?
It's true. Yeah. And you know, again, I do want to reiterate, if you're looking for a show-stopping aromatic that makes the room smell really, really good and is these, standalone, really over-the-top flavors that you get that are very distinctive, this is not the tobacco that you want to try. This is something that is a good all-day, everyday smoke that is very, very simple, lightly sweetened, and has a nice natural flavor. So anyway, it goes good with your favorite whiskey, I think.
All right. Well, great stuff, man. You know, the great thing is whenever we talk about these various whiskeys and pipe tobaccos and, you know, especially after given that the lesson, after you've educated us about our palates, you're right. I thought we'd be partying down, but this is really kind of that final exam, the test to see how well we have trained our palates. And, you know, if you're going to go to that final exam, you're going to have a nice glass. Make sure you got a little bit of water there to cleanse your palate along the process. But you need the proper utensils for the test taking. Some might say if you were going to class, you need that that standard number two pencil. Here for pipe tobacco, we say you need a standard quality corncob pipe from our good friends at Missouri Meerschaum.
Man, that is exactly right. There's no better way to pair a great new pipe tobacco than a brand new corncob pipe or a clay pipe now from Missouri Meerschaum. But
that's right.
Yeah,
yes,
that's right. They are still selling their Independence Day set, which is really cool. It's an Independence Day bundle 2021. It comes with their signature tin. It's an English aromatic of Independence Day pipe tobacco and just a very handsome coin vacuum seal style tin and a kind of rough looking billiard pipe and a bent or straight variety, along with a beautiful Old Dominion clay pipe as well. And so it's just a really nice set. Gives you a couple pipes, some good opportunities there to try a new tobacco that they'll bring you, but also pipes that if you take care of them will last for a really long time. Love smoking new blends out of a clay pipe. So much flavor potential there, opportunity to experience the nuances of a real, complex tobacco. And so an Old Dominion clay from Missouri Meerschaum is exactly what you want in that case. So check them out. You can go to corncobpipe.com and get the Independence Day bundle 2021, and they'll ship it right to your front door.
That's right. And if you happen to have your clay pipe, your Old Dominion from our good friends at Missouri Meerschaum, be sure while you're enjoying it to snap a picture of yourself doing so, post it out on the Twitters. It's a great way to let the good folks at Missouri Meerschaum know we appreciate them for sponsoring this show.
Pipe question of the week.
All right, man, pipe question of the week. This week, coming in from Eric, who writes in saying, pipe tobacco cellaring question. I have cellared deep in the last few years, and I am looking for the ideal tin storage method. I smoke 2 to 3 bowls a week and currently have enough tobacco to last me 25 to 30 years. Don't worry. I won't stop patronizing the shop. I realize I need these tins to last the long haul. Yeah. I already have a method for the coin style tins, vacuum seal them in food savoring bags, then impulse seal them into Mylar bags. I am looking for the ideal way to store the McClelland C&D style tins. So of course, McClelland and Cornell and Diehl style tins. The concern is that I live in Houston. What up, Eric? And the humidity is unrelenting, and I worry about rust development. The solution I came up with is to place the tins in weather-tightened totes with silica dedication pouches to maintain low humidity. The tins are hermetically sealed, so I don't see a drawback to low humidity, but I could be overlooking something. Thoughts? Avoiding the mason jarring method, how can one best maintain tins for the long haul? Best regards, Eric. All right, now see, I'm a big proponent of the mason jarring method. In fact, all of my tobaccos cellared here in Houston, Texas, are in mason jars. So I'm pulling my seat up next to Eric here and hearing for what
you're listening. Yeah, man, Eric, great to hear from you, brother. We always longtime listener of the show. We love hearing from Eric. You know, interesting, of course, we also in central Mississippi live in a place where humans just probably shouldn't, frankly, and the humidity is just out of control. And so we do occasionally see, you know, the rims and metal portions of a mason jar will actually rust, like you're talking about, kind of in that setup. And so, I think what you've come up with, if I'm understanding it correctly, you've got the tins that are inside a larger container, these weather-tight totes with these little low-humidity pouches in there. I think that's probably a pretty good compromise. The only other thing I would do is instead of leaving it in the Cornell and Diehl style can, maybe putting it in a mason jar at that point and then putting the mason jars in this kind of environment where the external part is a little more low-humidity. Eric, you know, it looks like you have... if I'm reading this correctly, you've hermetically sealed the open tins of tobacco. So for the listener, if you're having trouble following, which is would not be far-fetched to think about because I'm stumbling through this as we do week to week, you know, it sounds like, Eric, what you've done is you've found a way to reseal the Cornell and Diehl style can, and then you're putting it inside of a Tupperware or something of that nature. I think as long as that's the case, I don't know if you're saying you've resealed the cans or if you are sealing them, you know, it just they're unopened and they're, you know, a pristine sealed state that you get them from the factory or whatever, but then placing them in this kind of environment, I think that's fine as long as the tin itself is sealed. You don't want to expose the internal contents of the tin to that low humidity environment. It obviously defeating the purpose. But it sounds like to me what you're worried about more is the external part and the integrity of that can, and then, you know, the humidity starting to affect the metal, and you know, then thereby impregnating the tobacco with some terrible thing that shouldn't be in there. And so it sounds like you've come up with an interesting solution there. If I'm understanding this right, it's like you've resealed the Cornell and Deal style tins, and I'd be interested on how you did that. If that's not what you're doing, maybe just to explain that some more, but give us some more maybe information on that. I think, you know, if you are looking to avoid the mason jar method, as long as those tins are sealed and then they're placed in another environment, like this Tupperware kind of tote that you've got, you're trying to maintain a low humidity in there to protect the integrity of the can. I think that's fine. As long as the tin is truly sealed, you know, I would not do that, you know, with a vacuum seal style tin, because I'd be worried about the low humidity content starting to affect the, you know, the seal on that actual can. You know, I just don't know if that's you know, if that would be a safe bet. So anyway, all that to say, it sounds like you've got a good system going on. We'd love to know more about it. And certainly we could use some tips like that in our swamp environment here down the road from you.
So I want to just, as a quick follow-up, am I okay that I'm using the mason jar sitting here in Houston, Texas?
Well, I think so. I mean, that's one of those things where, you know, occasionally, particularly folks that leave their mason jars like outside or something, you just want to make sure wherever your mason jars are, you don't want them to just be soaking in humidity because, you know, right, of the that they can rust. They can just rust. And so that's something to keep in mind, something to think about. And so that's what my understanding, gotcha, of what he's talking about is that's what he's trying to mitigate here. And his solution is to take the Cornell and Deal style can and make sure it's sealed. Whether he's saying it's sealed from the factory or he's resealing it, I can't tell. But make sure it's sealed, and then putting it inside a larger, you know, tote container, rubber container, something like that, with some of these little silica pouches that you find in,
yeah,
you know, when you buy like a pair of shoes or a new bag or something, like they'll have these little silica pouches in there to absorb the moisture, to make sure you know, there's no water damage or any kind of condensation, mildew, molding inside of you know, this expensive garment that you've bought or whatever it is. And so he's taken some of those and put them inside this tote to make sure the environment that these cans are in is nice and dry, but also making sure that the inside of the cans are appropriately humid. And so he's walking a tightrope here to make sure that all that's taken care of. So Eric, give us some more finer points on exactly what you've done here, but it sounds like that maybe you've done just the right thing.
Yeah. Awesome. And Eric, if you send those in, we'll include those in a future listener feedback and be sure to share them there. But thank you so much for your question. And hey, if you've got a pipe question of the week for us, be sure to send it into the show. That is show@countrysquireradio.com. Again, that's show@countrysquireradio.com.
Quick fire with the squire.
Quick fire question.
Ow!
All right, man. Pastor Joda is, you know, last week we said he's sending us in. He's getting us back on track with our traditional quick fire questions.
Yeah.
Last week, he took us to space. Mm. This week, he's taking us to Disney World.
Oh, man. Oh, great. That's
all
awesome.
Right. All right, man. You ready for this?
Yep.
All right, let's do it. Donald or Mickey?
Mickey.
Yeah, right. I mean, like, Mickey's a class. If it's like, who do you want to hang out with? Mickey. If it's like, who are you most like? I'm probably actually more like me. I was going to say Donald to be funny, but actually, I think I'm probably a little bit more of a showman. And Mickey is, yeah, certainly a showman.
Well, that's true. Yeah. No, I don't. Well, you know, Donald Duck doesn't wear pants. So there is that.
Oh, okay. Yeah, we're Donald.
Right.
We're Donald. Okay, gotcha. All right, next up, Disney World or Disneyland?
I'm going to go with Disney World because it's closer to where I live, and it's also bigger, so yeah, there's probably a little more to do, but not that Disneyland doesn't have a lack of things to do. I'm sure there's plenty.
Yeah. Okay. So Disney World I've went to as a child, Disneyland I've been to as an adult. And so I have kind of different memories attached to both. You're right. Disney World is much bigger, but Disneyland has like these, like one or two rides that are exclusive to Disneyland.
Yeah.
Like the Indiana Jones ride in Disneyland is incredible and they don't have it in Disney World. It makes me mad.
You're just mad that you got a spanking by Splash Mountain or something, you know.
Splash Mountain's incredible. Splash Mountain's a lot of fun, man. That's especially when you got the heat of California or the heat especially Louisiana, but Florida, it's essentially Louisiana, right, down in the bayou there. But regardless, yeah, I'm gonna give it to Disneyland by a hair, but mostly just because that's the place I've been to most recently.
There you go.
All right, original, animated, or live action remakes.
I guess original animation. I don't know. I mean, I think, when he's talking about original animation versus live action.
Well, he's saying the live action remakes of the original animation. So like new Aladdin, the new Lion King, which is technically animated.
I got it. I got to go with the original.
Yeah, I'll say they both have their place. I know some kind of, more older and curmudgeon folks are like, why would they even do this? And I'm like, well, I got kids, and the kids love the live action remakes.
Yeah.
it's not for us. We had our animated things, and we love the animated things, but, the live action stuff has its merit, and some of, the remakes of the songs are really good. So I like both, but obviously because I've got the nostalgia, I'm going to go for the original cartoons, of course.
Very good.
And then Marvel or Star Wars?
I Marvel at Star Wars. It's Star Wars.
Man, gosh. If you had asked me this question like 15 years ago, I would laugh and say Star Wars, of course. But today, probably Marvel? Yeah. I mean, again, it depends on kind of where I am in my personal timeline here. But if we're talking today, I'm going to go with Marvel. I got to go with Marvel.
Yeah, great. Yeah. No, that's good. Everybody likes a little spandex in their life.
Finally, true or false? This is evil, Joda. He says, true or false, Disney broke Star Wars. I'm going to say definitively false. The concept of breaking Star Wars, I was coming out of high school when the prequels started, and the whole talk there was George Lucas had broken Star Wars with the prequels. And then, we get the Clone Wars and what Dave Filoni has done both in animation back then and in live action now. The reality is Star Wars has good and Star Wars has bad. There have been decisions that are made with the new films that I think are incredible. When Rey was introduced, she was a wonderful character who my daughters in particular really attached to. But at the same time, I hate that character had such a terrible storyline, and you could see the execution and the planning wasn't there. It was a great concept that just didn't really pan out, and I wish it had. So complexity, right? Star Wars is complex. It's not broken. It just has some good. It's got some bad, and you take them both, and there you have Star Wars. So there you go. That's my answer to that question.
I thoroughly agree. Yeah. No, I mean, Disney, Star Wars under Disney has a new flavor, right? It's got a new, experience.
Yeah, but both good and bad. See, that's the thing.
I agree. I think it's, there's things that are positive from it, and there's things that, we appreciate probably the former, the original kind of flavor, over the modern.
Yeah.
But it's okay. It hadn't killed it off yet.
Well, and I would also point out, you got to include as part of the modern stuff. And I know you haven't seen any of this, but the Mandalorian series, which is phenomenal.
Yeah, I've heard it's great.
Oh, it's so good. That's incredible. The final season of Clone Wars made the Order 66 the kind of Thanos snap moment it should have always been. And I would actually say that the Clone Wars animated series by Disney at this point was better than Revenge of the Sith post Disney, or at least that moment was done better. And, of course, Ahsoka Tano and her whole story arc started with, pre Disney, but man, with that final season, whoo, incredible. And what they're probably going to do with the live action series there, I'm super stoked for when she showed up in Mandalorian. Incredible. Anyway, a lot of people don't know what we're talking about, but regardless, that's my answer.
Yeah, I have no clue.
That's the answer to that one. So yeah, good question, Pastor Jode. I really, really enjoyed that. Even if the vast majority of our listeners didn't. So also be sure to...
Thanks for throwing us a bone.
Hey, if you've got some quickfire questions for us, send them into the show. That's show@countrysquireradio.com.
Your thoughts, your comments, listener feedback.
listener feedback.
Yeah, this one comes from Nelson. He says, morning, guys. Haven't been listening since COVID hit, since I no longer had a commute, but am catching up now and have a couple of comments. About the McClellan shows, you guys put it out there, just own it, and stop walking on eggshells every time you talk about it. Hopefully others in the industry who may find themselves in the same situation will rethink their exit strategy. Now, about the training, your pilot episodes, they've been interesting and informative. Thanks for putting them out there. And that's from Nelson. So, Nelson, man, thank you so much, brother. Great comments, good feedback. And I think you're onto something.
Well, and I want to address something he says here, because in terms of walking on eggshells, let me be very, very clear. We stand by everything that we said. There's nothing in that that we were kind of trying to like tiptoe around or anything like that. Some of the kind of the joking that we've made in the past about it really comes to do with, because that episode was so popular, like, we don't want that episode to define our entire series. You know what I mean?
That's true.
So it's,
yeah,
it's,
I understand what you're saying.
For example, Nelson, there is a joke of a pairing of pipe tobacco and something that we don't refer to anymore because people felt like that was, some people, not everybody, but some people felt like that was a little overplayed of a joke. So we still make the joke. We don't acknowledge what it is. And it's kind of like this fun little in for those of y'all who've been listening long. You know, the Hobbit sauce. Oh, the Hobbit sauce is what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
So from that standpoint, I think we're trying to be careful with not like oversaturating about that episode, but it's not out of fear or not wanting to own what we said. We stand by it wholeheartedly, co-sign, and we'll double down anytime. I think the main thing is, like I said, just not wanting to overdo it. Like, in fact, even in this episode, we're short for time, and so it'll end up next week, but there's another listener feedback related to that episode, and we've got several listener feedbacks related to that episode. So,
you know,
I think it's just wanting to kind of pepper out that discussion so that it's not just the whole thing all the time. But anyway,
yeah.
Hopefully that set your mind at ease, brother. Appreciate that feedback, but I want you to know that we're not attempting to walk on eggshells by any stretch of the imagination. And if we came across that way, that is, it was certainly not the intention. All right. Well, good deal. Well, man, that is the Squire Select from the good folks at Grand Rapids, Michigan. Shout out to the Furniture City Pipe Club out there, of which you and I are both official members of. Honorary.
I know, right? Yeah. Man, they're really desperate for new members.
Not at all, man. This is a great honor. What you talking about?
It is a great honor. I'm like, man, they just, you know, had to dredge the bottom of the channel there to to find the likes of you and me. But man, really, really honored by those guys, and glad to be a part of their community.
Absolutely. And enjoying some of the spirits from their hometown to boot, that you had delivered it to the store and I got to enjoy, allegedly. All right.
Yep.
Want to encourage all y'all, if y'all got some thoughts, feedback, or anything else for the show, of course, you can write into the show at countrysquireradio.com. You can follow the show on Twitter at Squire Radio. You can follow John David at John David Cole. You can follow the shop at _CountrySquire. But all that information and more can be found at countrysquireradio.com. Well, John David, man, it was a good one.
Man, I know. I had fun, dude. It's always good trying some new, new spirits from across the country. And, of course, figuring out an excuse to pop open a new can of tobacco. So, anyway, I hope y'all enjoyed it. And give us your feedback. We'd love to hear from you.
That's right, man. Hey, let's go have a day.
See you, brother.